tell me what today's decision means for you.
Today's decision was just, you know, another example of how, like, this community and the United States in itself is willing to continue to keep fighting to keep DACA in place. It's definitely been up for grabs and up for the vote several times, and luckily, it's, you know, people are still fighting, and this continues to still be the fight. So it definitely gave us a hope, saying that, you know, we are going in the right direction, but this fight is definitely not over, and we're going to have to continue.
Can you tell me about applying for DACA in the first place and what it's meant to your life? How has it changed your life?
Yeah, so originally DACA, it definitely opened up a lot of doorways for myself. I was able to apply prior to entering college, and so I entered college with DACA, and that allowed me to work and fund my college education, help my family out, even potentially help my siblings who are also going to college soon, because college is expensive, you know. But there's it definitely has opened up a lot of economic contribution opportunities for myself, and it definitely is something that I would like to continue.
Can I ask where your family's from?
Yeah, so my family's originally from Mexico. I migrated to the United States when I was 2 years old. So I've been here about like 22, 23 years going on now.
So coming to the U.S. at two, we hear a lot about, you know, most DACA recipients don't remember the country of their birth. The U.S. is really the only home that they've known. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, definitely. Like I mentioned, I did come here when I was two. So even, you know, being aware or having any memories of prior to 2 years old is possibly technically impossible. I don't have any memories of home, and I definitely yearn for the day so I can go back. I was fortunate enough to be able to travel to Mexico via Advanced Parole, which was something that was originally offered as part of the DACA program. But over the years, as we've noticed, that the administration did revoke that right, and that might be something that might be eligible now. But, you know, that's definitely something that people look forward to. But, yeah, a lot of DACA recipients haven't necessarily been able to go back to their country at first because that's not something that they're allowed to do.
We have seen really harsh language and harsh policies from the Trump administration, specifically on Mexican immigrants to the United States, you know, from the time he was a candidate. And, of course, you know, throughout his time in the White House. I wonder, you know, given all of that, if this takes on extra weight for you today?
Yeah, so there's definitely, you know, an anti-immigrant rhetoric that's grown a little bit more within being under the Trump administration. But like I mentioned previously, the fact that, you know, DACA program is still alive and people are still willing to continue and fight for it definitely shows that that's not what our nation is about. It definitely seems like we are immigrant friendly and, you know, this is our home. That, like, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. It's not necessarily a legal fight. It's not necessarily, I don't know how to put it. It's more so, you know, morality-based. People are here to work. People are here to contribute to the world, make a living for themselves, and support their families. We're not committing any crimes, so he keeps stating. But, yeah, it definitely has brought up an increase in anti-immigrant rhetoric. But, like I mentioned, this fight is still here. The fact that this program is still alive, it gives me hope to continue.
And can you tell me a bit about your work as a paralegal in immigration law?
Yeah, so fortunately, growing up, you know, in this type of limbo, it definitely opened up my eyes to how my community in itself may not always be aware of or may not always know, like, where to seek the solutions regarding immigration law. So I definitely wanted to educate myself and become part of that sector and work in that sector so I can, you know, become one of those people that wouldn't oppress the community, but basically educate them on what their immigration rights are. So working as an immigration paralegal here in Buffalo, New York specifically, we are very close to the Batavia Immigration Detention Facility. So a lot of our clients come from there. I want to say at least half of them. And it's definitely been a learning experience, seeing firsthand how people have to interact with the administration when they're trying to seek some form of immigration release. It gives you a very, you know, realistic and it questions morality sometimes when you go through cases like these, but it definitely has opened up my eyes, and I feel like this is what I was, you know, born to do, because all I want to do is help my community.
I wonder if you can tell me about any common misconceptions that you've come across or heard about, you know, about DACA recipients.
There's common misconceptions, so many of them, I'm not even entirely sure, but definitely, you know, the economic stance, a lot of immigrants, you know, don't pay taxes, they don't contribute to the economy. We have the numbers, we have the statistics. There's, you know, we're in the thousands here. It's not like one or two recipients. We have 700,000 DACA recipients, you know, who came to this country as children. They grew up in these neighborhoods, you know, they started contributing to the economy. And that's something, you know, we just have to keep uplifting.
Yeah. Are you exchanging any messages today with friends who might be also DACA recipients? You know, what are you hearing from that community of, you know, more than 700,000 young immigrants across the country?
Yeah, so from several, you know, DACA circles that I've had personally, we see that this is, you know, a win for our community, a win for DACA recipients, but we're not content. This is not, like, we're not going to be happy with this. Like, this is a temporary solution, and we're proud of what today brought today regarding the SCOTUS decision, but there is more work to be done. There is still people who aren't accounted for, and we're definitely going to keep going because that's what all these circles are saying, that this is fine. It's great that we got a win today, but this just means that we can continue fighting and, you know, hope for more.
One thing I was, you know, thinking about asking you, a couple of other people I've talked to today have said that this decision means, obviously it was always going to be a critical decision, but the fact that it's coming right now during a time of, you know, social upheaval on issues of racism and, you know, civil rights, frankly, that this means even more today. Do you feel that way? Like, how do you feel this? Do you feel as though it's related to the current protests we're seeing over systemic racism?
Yeah, definitely. I believe that, you know, all these injustices are interrelated, and that with, you know, if there's injustice against one of us, there is injustice for everybody. But yeah, this definitely was a decision that came during a time of chaos. I don't want to say chaos, a time of turmoil where it might not be the best situations, but it would have been, I want to say, chaotic had the Supreme Court ruled against it. Because there are, as I mentioned, there are thousands of people who are employed, thousands of DACA recipients that are on the front lines right now, specifically regarding COVID. There's a lot of people who are on the front lines fighting and working. So these people to lose their authorization to work, all those people would be out of the job industry. And, you know, who will be there to resume their positions? That means people who are healthcare workers, people who are on the front lines, 200,000 essential workers. If all these people were to, you know, to dissipate within a day, what would happen to the world? What would happen to the front lines? And also the fact that there are many issues and all these issues are interrelated, that, you know, DACA recipients isn't just people from Latin America. We also have, there are thousands of Black DACA recipients and their families, you know, are also being probably twice as much being proportionally affected with what's going on, as you've mentioned.
Yeah, that's an amazing statistic. You said 200,000 essential workers among the DACA population.
Mm-hmm. And those are just people, you know, working on the front lines. There are still, you know, specific groups. We can break them down, but there's a lot of people working on the front lines, and we can't afford, you know, to have those people lose their permit just because of anti-immigrant rhetoric that's going on in the Trump administration.
Yeah, I also, my main beat is education for the station, and I know that there's a huge number of DACA recipients who are, you know, teachers and educators. So
exactly.
This is a,
imagine,
you know,
all those teachers disappear within a day. Where are the students going to go? It's just, yeah, it's just very, I don't know, it just makes me very anxious to think about something like that happening.
Are you going to, do you feel like you'll be able to relax a little bit now? You know, I wonder how today's decision, how you feel like it's going to affect you in terms of your daily life.
Yeah, so definitely, I think like that today's decision will allow me to, you know, to have a sense of relief, but just for today, because tomorrow, I was fortunate enough, and I literally just renewed my DACA just like about a month ago, and it got approved. So to find out that, you know, that happened within the same timing, it's just another thing. Like, yes, I got another 2 years, but again, there was no permanent solution put in place. So if we check in within two more years, you know, what is the situation going to be like then? We don't know if the immigration law is going to change in our favor within that time. This is temporary, and I mentioned everybody is forced to live 2 years at a time. Can you imagine someone living 2 years at a time, you know, buying a house, having kids? Like, how could you possibly live 2 years at a time when, you know, your life, your future is in limbo?
That's, you know, incredibly difficult position to be in. How difficult is that renewal application that you have to go through every 2 years?
The renewal isn't as difficult as long as, you know, you remain eligible, but there is always the potential of not being eligible, whether it be, you know, someone had some form of, I don't know, negative indicator. I guess the renewal is not as difficult, but it's just the fee. You know, there's always this, with every renewal, you always would have to pay the $4.95, which is not to say that it's a lot. But I find it so ironic that someone has to apply and pay for a work permit that only, you know, lasts 2 years, whereas, you know, and this is something that just has to be done continuously every 2 years. It's just, you know, it's temporary. We need a permanent solution so that we're not thinking 2 years at a time, so that we're able to have a sense of relief and, you know, continue going about our lives, contributing to the world as everybody else without fear that, you know, my 2 years are about to be up and I might have to, you know, choose an alternative action for myself.
Yeah, you said $495 for the fee?
Yep. Yep. Wow. That's the fee every single time. Every 2 years.
Well, Flora, thank you so much. This is really powerful, and I'm really excited to share this conversation with our listeners. Thank you again for taking the time today, Flora.
No problem. Thank you.